The weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. Washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost like the middleman that passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am so excited. I have two gorgeous lightweight cashmere sweaters coming my way, one camel, one heather gray. I cannot wait to wear them in the warmer months when it's chilly in LA. Throwing them over my shoulders, going to look so cute. Can't wait. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/judgingmegan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/judgingmegan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/judgingmegan. And now, back to the podcast.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today, I'm excited to share something that's truly close to the journey that I'm going through of healing and growth. Mindful wellness is a revolutionary way to approach weight loss, hormone replacement, substance abuse, and overall wellness. I have been on and off the program for several months now. I gained a little bit of weight. I'm trying to lose that weight. I had my hysterectomy. I love working with Dr. Gupta and staff, Dr. Shah for my hormones. It's just been the best process for me and the best experience. At Mindful Wellness, the belief is that sustainable health changes come from understanding and addressing the entire spectrum of our lives, not just prescribing medication like a lot of these doctors do and moving on. It's a holistic approach that places you, the individual, at the center of the healing process. Right now, they're making this comprehensive care more accessible through incredible specials, inviting you to start a journey that truly understands and caters to your need. What stands out about Mindful Wellness is their commitment to creating a partnership with each person that you work with. I truly love working with them. I'm so excited to partner with them. I know if you reach out today, you will get the support that I've gotten, and I can't rave enough about Dr. Gupta and staff. Go to Mindful Wellness today. That's mindfulweightloss.com and start your journey to a better and healthier you. Hi, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. If you're watching this on YouTube, I am still dealing with lights, the lighting issue from the last episode, and they glare on my glasses and it drives me crazy. Anyways, I'm in a funky place, and I just met the beautiful author that I have on today, who I'm going to introduce in a second. And I woke up to tremendous back pain and spasming, which is not fun because I struggle with a herniated disc and something called spondylolisthesis in my back. And so it acts up like if I travel, I haven't been able to work out for a couple of months because I had a hysterectomy. My guest is probably like, oh, I can't wait to talk to you today. This is going to be fun. And so I just, everything's like shutting down. And then on top of that, I talk a lot about Julie, my best friend that I lost 21 years ago today. So it's, you know, been a little bit of a heavy morning. I like to think about her and think about happy things. And I know a lot of you come to the podcast to talk about grief and loss. And she's my angel and she's always with me. And I'm waiting to see a monarch butterfly today because I'm hoping I see one. It's chilly, but I'm purposely going to walk down the wood chips path and see if I see a monarch butterfly. And then occasionally I do talk to them. Just so you know, Robin, those are my signs that I know Julie's with me as the monarch butterfly. And if you are dealing with loss and grief, I talk a lot about this. You know, it's a lifelong process. I like to say they're in the next room. I feel her overwhelmingly with me, especially today. And I just think it's important to never forget the people that we've lost in our life, especially somebody as wonderful as my best friend was. She was just she was the best. There was nobody like her. And I think that that's why she left me so soon.
We've all been put here for a reason and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
Anyways, I would love to introduce award-winning author Robin Finn, known for her essay, When Our Daughter Walked In on Us. She's been featured in the Washington Post, BuzzFeed, Huffington Post, just to name a few. She has a book coming out called Heart, Soul, Pen on April 30th. I cannot wait to read it. She's also a teacher. Welcome to my podcast, Robin. It's so nice to have you today.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say I'm sorry for your loss. May your friend's memory always be a blessing. I lost my mom 4 years ago. And whenever I have ducks in my pool, which I do, I'm always like, hi, mom. So I know, you know, the signs of just knowing they're always with you.
Well, it's true. I mean, and I'm very sorry for the loss of your mom. But I one of my other best friends from growing up sent me this thing yesterday from Mel Robbins, who I love. And it was talking about the signs and how they really, a lot of people share my sign, which is the monarch butterfly. Ducks in a pool is a new one. I haven't heard that one yet. I love that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, whenever there's a bird tweeting at me, sometimes it's a crow, but I'm always like, hi, mom, because I know it's my mom.
The bird, you have the bird thing. Listen to those signs because they're real. I mean, I've been doing this 4 years, and over the 4 years, some of the signs that I've heard from people are like, no, there's no way that they're not with us or they're not trying to. I like to say they're in the next room. I say that all the time. We just can't see them. And we just really miss them, but I really believe they're in a happier place, you know, and it's hard. It's a hard thing to have to go through a lifetime of not being with somebody that you love, no matter how long we have left on this planet, you know?
Yes. And I heard you say in another podcast that I was listening to that, you know, grief is a lifelong journey. I think that is so accurate, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And I don't, it's not, I always say it's the club nobody wants to belong to, but it changes you. I think this is my opinion for the better, you know, like each loss that I've gone through in my life has changed me, hopefully for the better a little bit. I know that when I lost Julie 21 years ago, I was very angry because I had lost my dad as a girl and was, you know, was like, oh, I'm just going to be mad for the rest of my life that I went through this. And then when I lost Julie, it really, it really just changed me, you know, to want to be more like her, want to model myself more into what she was like as a human being. And I think sometimes when we think about like loss, like the loss of your mom or the loss of Julie or whatever your relationship is, that we take a piece of those people. And although like our hearts are broken a little bit forever, they mold us into doing better, hopefully, in this lifetime and not going to the dark side and being angry at the loss, but rather like learning from it. And that's what I try to remind myself, especially when I'm giving people the middle finger on the freeway, cutting me off. Would Julie do this? Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, Robin, let's start with you because this is about you today. Let's talk a little bit about your story. So I always ask people, where'd you grow up? Tell me a little bit about your childhood and let's go from there.
Okay. Well, I grew up part of the time in Cincinnati. I lived in Cincinnati until I was 10. And then I grew up in Florida. And I'm the youngest of three. I have two older brothers. And, you know, it's interesting because people sometimes will ask me, like, have you always been a writer? And I sort of reclaimed myself as a writer when I was 40. But the truth is, I was always a writer from the time I was a little kid. I was always writing. But I got the message from my dad in particular that being an artist was a lazy loser. Like, he did not believe in artists. That was his own background. But so for me, like at a really young age, I tried to let go of that part of myself because I wanted to be like admirable. I didn't want to be a lazy loser. So I tried to kind of push that aside.
And what was your childhood happy? Tell me a little bit about your childhood if you're comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, for the most part, I was a happy kid. I would say that my father really loomed large because he was a very intense personality. And when I was a kid, I felt like I had to walk on eggshells. And that made me very anxious. And my mother was like this joyful person who was so filled with love. But it was like kind of a mismatch, in my opinion, to grow up with like this really intense and somewhat rage-filled father. And then this mother who was love and light. And that's what she wanted to see. And that's what she saw. And then there was me kind of being like, what's the reality going on here? From a young age, I kind of understood. I'm not sure this is like reality.
Do you think that when you say, you know, you were kind of pushed away from following the writing path and the art path, because I grew up wanting to act from a very young age, doing theater and all that stuff. And my parents didn't love it. It's not like they didn't want it for me, but they just were like, let's do something realistic. You know, like, you don't really want to do that. But I love the arts. I would escape into characters from a young age. I feel like a lot of times people that are like writers, artists, writers and artists are the same people, but they find themselves wanting to like live in a land of escaping. Did you find that for yourself?
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. But I think, yeah, I was like a very early journal writer and, you know, fantasy stories. And yes, I think writing was a huge escape. And it wasn't really until later where I would look back and think like I won ribbons for poetry when I was a kid. Like, why didn't my parents encourage me? I mean, it was such a strange thing to look back and be like, okay, I needed writing. It was always a part of me. I wrote a letter to 17 magazine when I was like 12, you know, like I was always into writing. And it wasn't really until I became a parent myself, and I have my own artist children, that I felt like, how weird that they didn't encourage me. Why was that? But I think they didn't value it for really fear-based reasons, to your point, where you're like, you don't want your kid to be an artist. You want them to have a job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that now things have shifted to the point where I think a lot of parents, I mean, I have my 10-year-old is obsessed with acting and theater, just like I was. And I want to encourage her. It's not the path that I would love for her to go down just because I know how hard it is. But I love supporting her in the idea of being artistic and theatrical and like singing and dancing and all the things that she loves to do. And I do think that the generation that like we grew up in, our parents probably were in their defense. Like it's the same as not sending kids to therapy. You know, they didn't know back then. They were like, oh, just hold your problems in. Don't talk about them. It's about, you know, making money, and writing isn't something you're going to be making money doing, or acting isn't going to be. So I think maybe without knowing your dad, or that's probably along the same lines. Am I right on that? Do you think?
I think that's really true. And it's like, mm-hmm. they want to encourage you to do something where you can support yourself. And I get that. But I think the painful part is that you can so often end up divorcing a part of yourself, the part mm-hmm. of yourself that's the artist, the writer, the creator. Like for me, I feel like that's just like 99% of who I am. And so letting go of that whole part of myself at such a young age is really painful. And I feel like it's not until midlife for me personally, where I start looking around, like I need to reclaim all these parts of myself that have been gone. And sometimes they've been gone for like 30 years, you know, and you don't really feel like yourself because you are a creator. You're a singer, you're a dancer, you're a writer, but you don't write. And I think being a writer who doesn't write is so deeply painful.
I totally understand that. It's saying an actor that doesn't act. It's the same thing. I had to go into corporate America and quit the business, quit singing and acting because I needed to make a check. You know, I lived in Hollywood. I got to a point where I wasn't auditioning and I got really caught up in the club scene. And then I realized, well, for years and years, 15 years of my life, I was sucked into corporate America until I actually started doing something creative again, which is writing, kind of like you, and doing this podcast, which is a creative outlet for me where I get to actually talk to a lot of people that have, you know, 90% of the people I talk to are very right-brained and artistic and willing to talk about their emotions and their feelings. And again, if you go back in history, which I know you know because you're a smart lady, the people that have, I believe, have helped save our world are always the artists, are always the writers, are always the, you know, the people that are willing to be in touch with their true emotions. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I also think now more than ever, where mm-hmm. people really want to connect, it's like art is such a powerful way of connecting. And we're so desperate for connection. And in a way, you could argue like we need art now more than ever. We really, yeah. We are so not connected with each other and we just are so desperate for connection. Not just, I mean, I'd say with writing and I'm sure with acting, not just connecting with others, although that is so important, but even connecting to yourself, you know, like who am I? What's happening in my life? If you're divorced from these parts of yourself that love to be creative, it's lonely. You're lonely in your own self.
I agree. And I also think, like you just said, we need it more than ever because I turn on the news like we all do, which is terrifying to me. And every day there's upsetting stories and it's as if we are sucked into like this ongoing news cycle where if people just continue to not talk about their problems or write about them or whatever it is, I think we're going more and more downhill. Whereas if we just would connect with each other, I talk a lot about the human connection. I've interviewed authors about like social media and doctors and all the things that I have. I think just like what you're saying, connecting and art and writing is just really, really important. So I appreciate that you say that. Can you tell me a little bit about like your like going to UCLA and a little bit about once you got to that stage of your life?
Yeah, well, I went to UCLA undergrad and then I went to Columbia for a master's degree in public health and I worked in public health. And I like to say about my own writing journey that I was like a hardworking person and like very capable. And so I thought like, oh, when I get married and I have kids, I'm just going to be so capable. Like the fantasy family will be true and my kids will be a certain way. And I will bring all my capable skills and to parenting. It was really for me parenting that brought me to my knees and led me to despair. And then all the other things that happened, which was writing. But I would just say that I loved working in public health. I was always a person who loved service. I worked in women's health. I worked in tuberculosis control. And I mean, I just felt like I really got this. Like I really can handle myself. I put myself through college. I worked. I got married. Everything was great. And then I had kids. And that was when I realized, like the bomb went off. And I realized no matter how hard I work, I cannot force people to do or be or show up the way I want them to. And I think that was for me, like I would like to say parenting for me brought me to like the brink of my humanity where I had this idea that I was in control and I could kind of somehow force things to be a certain way. And that was just blown apart by being a parent.
Well, I'm sure women say to you all the time, how true that is. I mean, in my own life, that's true. I'm dealing with a 14-year-old that sometimes takes me to the brink of wanting to, I don't even know sometimes, like guttural cries that come out of my body in my room because it's so funny you say that because you picture, and I do talk about this on the podcast quite a bit, you picture your life as a parent, like looking a certain way, right? You're like, I'm going to have these magical children. They're going to behave all the time.
They'll be mini-me. They'll be just like me.
They'll be just like me. They'll like, I mean, the things that my kids say to me sometimes, I'm like, I was never allowed to talk to my mom like that. I tell my kids this and they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, I used to have my mouth like washed out with soap. Like we had to eat like soap.
Yeah, my mom did too.
All that stuff for using bad words or whatever it is. And now I look at my kids and I'm like, you know what? Like I would like to go to Sephora and buy like out like whatever the new weird like lipstick that they want every week. I mean, Sephora's become their church. I have a tween and a teen. But the parenting part of it, and I talk about parenting a lot on the podcast, is so hard. It's so hard. It just brings me to my knees often.
It does.
Like, what am I doing?
It played into so much into my writing journey because, you know, my origin story is my son and I were kicked out of Mommy and Me when he was 18 months old. And that is true because he had severe ADHD. And if you have a kid who's severely hyperactive, if you have a kid who's hyperactive at all, you will be judged.
Yeah.
You will not be invited to birthday parties. Other people will give you the stink eye. You'll fight with the school, you know, it was like, it was so hard to be a parent who was so conscientious and then be constantly judged and spend all of your time fighting with the school, fighting with the teacher, fighting for advocacy, fighting for accommodate, fighting. And I mean, for me, and I have three kids, that was my middle. So having a kid with special needs, having three kids and the constant fighting, it was so, I would say it really brought me to despair. And then I ended up going into this program to get a master's in spiritual psychology. And that really changed my life where I had this epiphany where I realized I don't have to fix anyone and no one is broken. And that was like, wow. And it really changed my whole relationship with parenting. And it also helped me understand that actually I'm a writer. And if I really want to be me, I have to write. So I originally started writing about parenting a kid with ADHD. And that was like coming out of the closet almost for me. I felt so much shame about it, about being a failure as a mother, about not being able to do this so beautifully. Like I thought I did so many other things in my life and being like brought to my knees. And I started writing about it. And that was really that was really the beginning of the change of my whole life, you know?
Well, I think it's so needed and so important because women constantly are trying to do everything, right? We're trying to be like the perfect mom, look the perfect way. I joke a lot about having my Facebook life. I wish I had my Facebook life. It would be so easy. You know, we're all smiling in pictures. I did read in your bio about the ADHD. I actually was diagnosed with ADHD as a kid. So the only reason they caught it in me was because my dad had passed away when I was in seventh grade and they suggested I get tested for it. But I understand what that's like growing up with it. And then being a mother myself, I was just telling my husband this story while we were on vacation, being in kindergarten and going to this party and there was a teacher there and I was talking to the teacher and I just said, "Oh, how's my daughter doing so far? How's the year going?" Cause I expected her to be like, "Oh, she's fantastic. She's great." And instead she said, "I think that there's some issues there. I think you're probably going to want to get her tested." And I remember going, "What?" Like, I didn't expect that. I knew that, you know, both my girls were wild. You know, they were, I was always the mom sitting in Mommy and Me, yes, which I can relate to. And these other moms' kids would just be like sitting quietly on their laps. And I would be the mom jumping up, sweating with like sweat and my butt crack showing, like my jeans coming down and like a butt crack showing, picking them up.
I wish we had known each other. Yeah. That was me really with all three of them.
Yeah.
And just all the other mothers were just enjoying their Starbucks and chit chatting. I couldn't even sit down because I had to like chase after them. That was difficult, but it was really the issues around school that drove me crazy because I felt like I felt like they knew me coming in the office and they would lock the door because I would be like walking up there because I was always trying to get accommodation. It was always a fight. Like I wanted a partner. Let's partner. But it was always a fight. And it always led me to feel so ashamed that like the message I always got from the school was, it's my fault. I'm doing something wrong as a parent. And I have to say, when I started writing about parenting a kid with ADHD, the thing that was the most beautiful for me was being flooded with emails from other parents saying like, "You're me," or "I'm going through this." Like I felt so alone. And like realizing like so many other parents were having this experience of trying to raise kids who are out of the box and being really shamed for it.
Yeah. I think it's still super common. I mean, I know there's parents that I see at the school and, you know, their kid might be the one that gets in trouble all the time in class. And my heart really goes out to those people because there's a lot of shame that people put on other people. Especially mothers, especially this, like, I mean, I talk a lot about how women treat other women. I talk about my ex-friends. I call them the Karens. And they just, you know, we want to cast so much judgment on each other, but we really need to look at ourselves and be more compassionate. And that's so, so important. And I know that that's part of what you write about, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, that's so true. And I just was teaching a class last week and one of my students wrote about the fighting with the school for her son. And I just thought to myself, 15 years later, my son's thriving. He's in college now. 15 years later, it's so painful. It brings me to tears to know nothing's changed. These people who have neurodivergent children are still, these parents are still fighting so hard and made to feel shame. And so I encourage her to write about it. And I think that it's an important story. So yes.
Well, I love that you said that too, because I'm a product of being an early diagnosed kid, you know, with attention deficit. And my mom still even says like, "Wow, like, look at what you've done," you know, because just because we're diagnosed with something as a kid doesn't mean we're not going to like outgrow it. Or for me, I have tricks that I do so I can hold conversations with people. I had a really hard time growing up holding eye contact with people, struggling in school. I was never a good student, all the kind of things that I struggled with. And, you know, I was able to be successful in corporate America and really good at my job. And so it's not a life sentence. It's not.
It's not. And I actually think that the hardest part is when you're a kid, because you don't have a lot of wiggle room to make your life fit who you are. When, you know, so when you're an adult, if you're like someone who needs to be doing a lot of multitasking or you need to take breaks or whatever it is, you can make a life that suits your skills and talents. But when you're a kid and they force you to go, you know, go through the program and do it this way, but it doesn't suit your own neurodivergent brain, you're kind of like out of luck. And then, you know, it's really rough. So I still have many, many women who write with me are moms, and I hear these stories and I'm shocked or saddened, or maybe not shocked, but how little has changed in that regard.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This time of year is the worst. I feel like I can't do anything and I can't enjoy my dinner because I can't taste my food and I can't work out because I feel tired and distracted. I can't even feel like I can host this show because my voice sounds like a duck. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D, designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I feel like I've been using Claritin D for probably a few months now, and I have really noticed a difference. I can work out. I'm not feeling like my eyes are watering and my nose is all stuffed up. I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So tell me, so once you started writing and like going back to school and then going into spiritual psychology, having your awakening, then how did your life kind of shift? Like you got to a point where you just said, I don't want to be in women's health anymore. Like this is my calling. This is what I'm supposed to do. Tell me a little bit about that, because I think there's so many women, me included, like I joke all the time. When I started this podcast, I was at the bottom of my life. I didn't want to go on. And my therapist said, pick yourself up, be creative, do something creative. I didn't even know what a podcast was. I never had listened to one, except actually I listened to one. And then I just went, I'm going to do this. And I started talking to people about trauma and like how their resiliency and like coming out the other side. What was like something for you? Like, so you went and just said, this isn't what I'm supposed to do. Tell me more about that.
Well, I was really like, I really would say despair, because I feel like I was failing at parenthood. And I also was an ambitious person, and I wanted to, I felt I was needed with my kids to stay at home with them. But I had this desire to have something for myself, and I didn't know how to have, you know, how to make all this happen. And I always like to say, like, I always thought I was on the wrong road, but I didn't realize I always was on the road. I just didn't see it. One of the things I really learned in spiritual psychology school was that I had all these limiting beliefs. I had these beliefs that I had to fix people. I had these beliefs that, you know, it's a mother's job is to devote her life to her children and be completely selfless and have nothing for herself. I had all these limiting beliefs. I also felt like, as a really loud, powerful woman, that I got messages from the time I was a little kid that I was too loud, I was bossy, I should keep my voice quiet, I should keep myself small. So you have all these beliefs. And it was really not until I went into spiritual psychology that I started to really look at my belief system and realize I believe all these beliefs that I don't even believe. And that's what is like, okay, I need to clear out my belief system and really write down all my beliefs. And a lot of them made me laugh, because it's like, I believe things I don't even believe. No, I don't believe I need to be quiet. No, I don't want to keep myself small. No, I don't believe I'm a bad mother. I'm actually a great mother. And it's not my job to fix anybody. It's my job to love my children while they struggle. And yes, I can be a writer and a mother. And yes, I have something to say. And my voice is important. All these things that I had to like rewrite and revise and really change my belief system. And that really gave me a lot of freedom to start to write, because I felt like the things I wanted to write about, the things that were happening in my life, like parenting and midlife, I felt like they were shameful. So It was really in rewriting my belief system and coming to understand the importance of my own voice that I let my voice out on the page. And then, you know, it was widely published, and I wrote lots of personal essays on all kinds of different things. But then what happened was women would come to me and say, like, I really want to write. I became a magnet for people telling me they wanted to write. And that's when I created Heart Soul Pen. It was like, heart soul is really writing from the heart and soul. And the pen is so powerful. And I think particularly for women who walk around, so many of us, with this idea that what we have to say isn't important, or we should stay small and be polite and nice, or we're bad. And, you know, like, I realized this is like crazy making. So my passion, my reason for living became like, I really want to have other women write with me, reclaim their voices, and know that what they have to say is important.
When you got to that point, like, did it change your parenting style? Like, that's a question that I wanted to ask you, because when you kind of had this awakening almost, did you take a step back and go, I need to do things differently?
I really want to say, Megan, thank you so much for asking me that, because it's not something I would have thought to say to you, but I just want to pay like gratitude to taking the time to really dig into some of the tools of spiritual psychology, because for me, it was life changing. It totally changed my parenting, because when I started to realize I don't have to fix anyone, I just have to love my people while they struggle, it created so much more room for compassion for myself and my kids. And for me to model for my own children, what does it look like to be a person who has self-compassion? It's not a great way to go through life always beating yourself up. It feels terrible. Mm-hmm. It's like we can be so much more when we learn how to support ourselves and be gentle with ourselves. And I would say then we are more supportive and gentle with others, you know? So I feel like, yes, it really changed my parenting style. I stopped trying to prove how great of a mom I was by how my children behaved. And I started accepting that when you have kids who are neurodivergent, they're going to look different, and that's okay. And to be gentle and kind to myself, and probably more gentle and kinder to my children. And I feel like it really created much more closeness, much more compassion. I mean, I'd say I'm really tight with my kids who are young adults now. And I think a lot of it has to do with letting go of this need to have them validate me because I was feeling like that's what it meant to be a good mom.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of women out there that struggle with this. So when you started Heart Soul Pen, and now you have the book coming out on April 30th, tell me a little bit about the book and like the whole journey of writing the book to get to where you are now.
Well, so I teach Heart Soul Pen, and I teach in Los Angeles and online in the United States and beyond. I have people who write with me, but really I wanted to write the book so that anyone who felt like they had lost their voice, because the subtitle, it's Heart Soul Pen, Find Your Voice on the Page and in Your Life. It was like for any woman in particular who feels like she lost her voice, I wanted to have these simple steps that you could follow to start to write and find your voice on the page. And I believe when you find your voice on the page, you just find it in your life. Because women so often were so busy doing, and often caregiving for others, we don't even know how we feel. But when you write, you're forced to take the time to go inside. You're forced to slow down. You're forced to get to know yourself and connect to yourself and your identity and your sanity in a way that's, years could go by and you just never do. So Heart Soul Pen, the purpose of it was like, here's some really easy steps to go through to not just learn to write, but to go into a place of curiosity and discovery about what you have to say. What is percolating inside of you? What is important to you? How do you feel about things as a woman, as a person, as a writer, as a mother? That's the connection we lose to our own voices. And I felt like finding my voice changed my life. And I believe finding other people for them to find their voice will change their life too.
Do you find that parenting, like women that are coming to you, is changing a lot as well? Like just the, like how people are having babies at like later ages, society's evolving. Well, I don't know if they're evolving. Maybe I take that back. Sorry, everyone. I'm joking.
But we want
this devolving. But just, I talk a lot, especially as of late, because I talk a lot about like perimenopause and like menopause, things that like nobody ever wants to talk about. So they like, you probably can connect to this, like how in parenting we have hormones, and then as we get older, it's harder to control our tempers. It's harder to like, do you deal with that at all? I'm just curious on that.
And I mean, a lot of women who write with me are mothers, but I launched this program called Hot Writing, and it's writing about midlife and menopause, because again, it's like, I want women to be able to write about what is true for them without shame. Mm-hmm. And midlife and menopause is, again, like, don't talk about it. Well, 50% of the population's female, and we're all going to go through it. So Hot Writing was really a part of Heart Soul Pen that just focused on feeling permission, giving yourself permission to write about menopause. I'm sweating. I have hot flashes. I like to tell my husband I have free floating rage. There's all kinds of crazy going on. And of course, women know what we're talking about, because if you're a certain age, you're going through it. So it's like this idea of coming to class and being able to write about your difficult children, your menopause, your period, all kinds of things that we as women, aging, beauty, things that as women we have kind of a different relationship to than men, and being able to write together. And like you said, like, why is menopause a secret?
Well, thankfully, I mean, I've done several episodes about it and probably given my audience way too much TMI about my own hysterectomy journey. But I think we're at a place, thank God, where we're able to now kind of more and more talk about it. I mean, you were in women's health. The fact that there's no budget put into our health. Or understanding what it's like to go through a miscarriage, or understanding, because we're supposed to just be like, okay with it, have a miscarriage, move on to have a baby. if you're lucky and that's what you want to do, or maybe you decide you don't want to have children and that's a whole nother judgment put upon you.
Absolutely.
And then you're kind of, you have your kids. I talk about this a lot. You're put out to pasture. We age. Some women choose to have Botox and filler and all that stuff. I'm very open with what I do. I definitely do those things, but there's always like this judgment piece of it. So I love that you're connecting all these pieces through writing. For me, I'm going to be honest. I'm in the process of writing my book. It's probably going to take me 25 years because I can't sit down to go back to the place of sadness and trauma and pain. There's just this pain. And that's like, I'm sure you got a lot of that with women where, you know, we're emotional, but our emotions are what make us so special and beautiful.
Yes. And I always have the class Kleenex box. And I joke with students often that, often someone will cry. But the thing is, the reason why is because when we write from our heart and soul, and we allow ourselves the freedom of curiosity and discovery, we often wander into places we didn't mean to go that are very emotionally charged. And in my opinion, it's totally fine. It's okay. We don't have to be afraid of that. You know, when we write and we allow our real feelings to come forward, I think it's also a process of just not being afraid of it. To your point, That's what makes us women love community. Women, you know, are deep feelers, and like being allowed to express it. And even sometimes there's tears and I just say, breathe through it. It's okay. We'll just allow that to come up and we'll get back to writing. You know, it's okay to have these feelings because otherwise we don't know how we feel.
Yeah. And we're special creatures. Like I'm so happy every day I wake up and I'm like, I'm not a man. I'm just very grateful. I mean, we go through a lot as women, but I love being a mom. I love pieces of going through like changes as I age. There's so much more wisdom that you get as you age. And I just think I'm lucky. I told you before we started recording, I hate wearing my glasses, and my listeners know that I talk about wearing glasses all the time, but I'm trying to like embrace aging. I'm just having a hard time with it because I'm my mother's daughter, and in our family, we're super vain. I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I do want to ask you from Heart Soul Pen, what are some tips that you talk about in the book so people can go out and grab the book? Because I'm going to read it. I can't wait. That you would give somebody that's in the book, snippets.
You know, one of the first steps I talk about is revising limiting beliefs. And I think it's a really great thing if you want to write, before you even start writing, to ask yourself, what are some of the beliefs I have about writing and about myself as a writer? Because so often people come to class and tell me, I really want to write, but I'm not a good writer. And then when we dig into that, it's like someone told them in the fifth grade or in college that they weren't a good writer, and it's not true. So I think it's an opportunity to look at what are some of the beliefs I have about myself as a writer and get rid of those if they're not supportive. Or this idea of like, my voice doesn't matter. Like, I want to write about menopause, but no one cares. Okay, that's a limiting belief. We can get rid of that right now. So to think about some of these things and give yourself full permission to write about whatever you want, just before you even put pen to paper. Give yourself full permission. I'm going on a journey of curiosity and discovery, and I'm going to let myself write anything I want. That is the kind of freedom that will get your creative juices flowing. I talk a lot in the book about writing to a timer. Like, to your point, Megan, you know, even if you have 5 minutes, you set your timer, write the entire time without stopping until the timer goes off. You will be amazed in 5 minutes what will come out. And if you're working on a project, even working on a project that way in little increments, you'd be amazed at how over time, 5 minutes, a couple times a week, you're going to start getting more and more material. So I'd say, like, don't let this idea of not having a lot of time be the enemy of getting things done. It's okay if it's even 5 minutes. And I talk about that in the book. I talk about writing to a timer. I also talk about making space for yourself, that it's so important for women in particular to make space for yourself if you want to write, whether that means buying yourself a journal or clearing off a little spot for yourself. And I love to have, I love to make little talismans, like a little crystal, a little candle, make a little pretty spot for yourself to welcome your creativity and take it seriously. Your creative self-expression matters. You are worthy of your own laptop, your own journal, your own space in your kitchen. You know, so these are ways that we welcome our muse. And I think women in particular don't give themselves the space to express themselves.
I think too, that right, like, as you were just talking about this, I look back on like letters from my dad. I have this amazing letter that he wrote me before he passed away. And I hold it so like close to my heart, or a card from my best friend, which we're making fun of each other. I've told this story before, but I'll tell you again. So we used to tease all the time, like back and forth, cry laughing. And she sent me this card one time. We had lived in away for the summer at the beach. And on the front of the card was a hippo. And then a bird was on the hippo's stomach. And then you open the card and she wrote this whole thing, this like lovely card to me talking about how we fought all summer. But she's sorry. Meanwhile, I was the asshole that was like a nightmare to live with the whole summer. It wasn't even her. And at the bottom of the card, it says, P.S. You're the hippo. So like there's the bird and the hippo. And I take this card out. And anytime I want to like really remember what my relationship was like with this human that's been gone for 21 years, I take out that card and I like either laugh or I cry, whatever, wherever I am at that moment. Writing is such a powerful gift that you're going to leave your children someday, right? And so I think it's so important. It's such a gift to, and like you said, like, I doubt myself. I'm a product of being diagnosed with ADD as a kid and people always telling me I wasn't smart and I'm the dumb blonde and all the things that I was labeled. But I know that, you know, I wrote that one essay and it's out on Amazon. I'm not going to plug it, but, and I'm writing the book and I'm doing it. And I just think one day I hope that I leave that and my kids can read it and they can maybe like smile or understand, or they can be like you're the hippo, you know, the same kind of thing that I felt. How do you feel about that?
I love what you're saying. And I guess there's two things that really come to my mind as I listen to you. One is the power of creating a writing ritual. And in your case, like holding that letter, connecting to your friend, and even to the joy and laughter it brings you, is a powerful tool. And like you could set up a little writing ritual. And I say in the book, like it could be three steps or two. It doesn't have to be hard. It could be listening to a favorite song and holding your card for a minute. But if you do that regularly and kind of ritualize it, it will help you when you sit down, get into that mode of like, okay, I'm in my creative juice and now I'm going to write. So these are like fun ways. And that's such a beautiful connection to your friend is the card. I love that idea. And then the other thing I was going to say, Megan, is I just can't tell you how many women tell me that they were told they're not smart, they're not a good writer, their voice does, you know, it is so crazy to me. And I go in the book, I have a list of like all the things people tell me. What you have to say doesn't matter. You're not smart enough. You're not educated enough. You don't have the right background. A writer has to, you know, be this kind of person and you're not. So, you know, all this crazy stuff that women are told that keep them from writing. And that's why I really encourage people to look at your beliefs and rewrite them, because the truth is you can write. You are a writer. You are writing. What you have to say is important. You have a lot of people to help. I mean, there's so much power to your words. And so I really, it just drives me crazy how women walk around and feel like they don't have the worth to write. And that is not true.
I love it. Where can people find the book?
The book is everywhere you buy your books. Heart Soul Pen is available, and it's available right now for pre-order. And as of April 30th, you can order your book. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, indie bookstores is available everywhere.
Well, I love talking to you today. I feel like it was such a fitting conversation. Like I say this a lot, everything happens for a reason. Some people hate it when I say that, but I really believe it. That's just my opinion, that I needed to talk to you today because there was such a connection talking about all the things that I really, truly care about. And I think what you're putting out into the world is so important. And I cannot wait to read your book. And I might be ordering that book at the minute I get off the phone, because I have to read a lot to be a podcaster. So I don't always read all the books beforehand, but I love what you're doing. And like I say all the time, everybody, I think it's important to remember what you were just talking about, Robin, which is like, you can like really believe in yourself. You know, I close every podcast now saying, you matter. Your story matters. Keep going. That's my tagline for my podcast.
I heard it when I was listening and I was like, oh, she's speaking my language. I just also want to say I'm at robinfinn.com. I'm at robinfinnauthor on Instagram. But at robinfinn.com, I have a little free mini workbook that walks you through some of these steps to change your limiting beliefs. So I really want to encourage people to go get the workbook, go to robinfinn.com, spend a few minutes looking at what do you believe about yourself, because you will laugh when you realize how stupid it is. And that your beliefs need to align with your dreams. And, you know, we have the power to do that, to just say these beliefs do not fit me anymore. And I'm going to have new ones that tell me that I'm great, that my story matters, and that I can do this, because, of course, you can.
Well, let me ask you one last question. So if you could talk to your younger self and say the younger Robin that was told, like, you shouldn't be writing, or there's something wrong with your kid, like, there's something wrong with you. What would you say to the younger mom Robin or the younger Robin?
I would tell her that she already knows inside her who she is, what she should be doing, you know, what her destiny is, what her passions are. She already knows. And to really listen to herself and not listen to anybody else. And I appreciate you bringing that up, because in the book, at the end of the book, I talk about owning your value. You are the expert of your own story and your own person. And if I could tell myself something when I was younger, I would remind me to look inside for my value, to look inside for who I am, because I know the truth and I don't need it. I don't need to hear it from anybody else.
I love it. I think it's so important. Robin, you're fantastic. It's so lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, in closing, just like Robin and I are talking about, you matter. Your story matters. Keep going. Go grab Robin's book as soon as you listen to this podcast, because it'll be out. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.